Hello and welcome to the Majlis Radio Free Arab Liberties Current Affairs Podcast focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis Podcast and Radio Free Arab Liberties Media Manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. It's been already challenging to be a migrant worker in Russia. With COVID-19 rapidly growing, life became a struggle for survival for many Central Asian migrant workers there. Their challenges have doubled and tripled due to the economic hardships, lack of employment, and their access to the healthcare system and restriction on their movements. On the top of that, borders are closed, which means they don't have a job, but they can't also leave the country and are practically trapped there, exposed to every possible harm on all fronts. Though COVID-19 has affected everyone, but migrant workers in Russia, particularly those with no legal status, are by far hit hard, and things doesn't really look good going forward. So today we are here to discuss the implications of COVID-19 on this vulnerable community and what the future holds for them as the pandemic continues to grow in Russia and elsewhere. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Damelia Aitkhuzina, Russia researcher for Human Rights Watch, Aruka Urankizi, Kyrgyz researcher and journalist currently with TRT World based in Istanbul, Tohir Safarovs, senior journalist with Radio Free Arab Liberties Tajik service, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today. So let's start with you, Damelia. In preparation to this discussion, I have immensely benefited from your recent piece about the detention facilities in Russia, which is very much relevant to what we are talking about today, given that lots of migrant workers also being tossed into those facilities for various alleged violations. So about your findings first, Damelia, on the detention facilities in Russia, what can be said on how is the detention centers are relevant to COVID-19 and the current situation of migrant workers in Russia?
Problem is that there were a lot of pre-existing problems with migration detention centers in Russia, and this pandemic really put a spotlight on a lot of those issues and challenges. So we looked into the situation in different parts of Russia, but focusing primarily on Moscow and St. Petersburg, because these two cities and corresponding detention centers house a large portion of migrants and stateless persons who are being detained there. And we need to clarify that apart from the labor migrants that get detained and are expelled or deported, these are two very different legal proceedings in Russia because of irregularities of their status or lack of certain documentation. There are other types of people who get detained there, including people who served criminal sentences, including for violent crimes, foreigners, who are automatically then subject to deportation upon release. And these people are housed in the same facilities as people who are held and are being deported or expelled for migration irregularities, which is a violation of international standards. You cannot detain people who have served sentences for violent crimes together with people who are not criminal. Apart from that, there are a lot of issues related to conditions in detention. And in the context of COVID-19 pandemic, an aspect related to access to healthcare and sanitary conditions in those detention centers are particularly problematic.
Since you raised the issues with regards to the healthcare system there, earlier I have seen a report which says that the migrant workers tested positive are not hospitalized in Russia. Have you seen anything like this?
So the cases that I have come across reading on the social media in the groups for migrants and in Russian media, because we have not come across the cases ourselves, people being identified as COVID positive, but there was a recent report with an official unverified confirmation from the Tajik embassy in Russia as well, that there was a huge news coverage on the discovery of 35, I believe, labor migrants who were tested positive in St. Petersburg region around Leningrad, it's called Leningrad region still, or in the hostel for labor migrants. There are so far no reports of positive COVID-19 cases in immigration detention centers. Trouble is that if there would be, the system is not designed to cope with infectious diseases or epidemics like this. Majority of those detention centers only have what amounts to nurse practitioner on the payroll. And there are consistent reports of lack of and shortages of medical equipment and medication, even basic medication. And there are procedural complications with actually referrals and taking people outside of these detention centers for attendance by our specialized doctors. So anything beyond very basic medical assistance that requires specialist assistance is highly problematic in those detention centers. And people are housed in cell-like our premises, in sometimes outright cells, 6-8 people in one cell. So these are unfortunately almost perfect conditions for spread of disease if it gets inside. The authorities are trying to limit. They actually stopped any visitations. Essentially any contact with the outside world for these people is now limited to mobile phones, which depending, because there is a lack of regulations on the access to cell phone usage, etc., and essentially is left at the discretion of administration of each individual detention center, is sometimes limited to 15 minutes every 4 days. And unfortunately, with the closed borders, this amounts to essentially indefinite detention, because unless the authorities start to consider what international human rights community is calling on the authorities across the globe to consider alternatives to detention, these people may remain in detention for undetermined length of time, even though majority of them have committed no crime whatsoever.
Right. Aruka, you were in St. Petersburg recently, and also you just did this terrific story for the diplomat about the challenges of migrant workers in Russia due to COVID-19. Now, Damilia was talking about the migrant workers who are in the detention facilities and their challenges. And there are lots of migrant workers outside. Some of them are regular, some of them are irregular, I mean, without legal papers there. Imagine one of them gets sick or tested positive. What happens to such person? Do they have access to the treatment? Do they go seeking treatment to health facilities?
Before answering to this question, I just wanted to lay down the conditions Central Asians live there. They are largely poor, they're illiterate Central Asians, and they accept very low-paid, menial jobs that usually Russians don't want to do, right? And they work on the construction sites, they sweep streets, and they have this work that makes them expose every day to the streets and to the stores and to the markets. And with your question, what we've seen is that Central Asian migrant workers are high risk of catching this virus, especially with the problem of the virus in the airport, because hundreds of migrant workers were stranded in different airports of, after Russia closed and stopped regular flights to Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, and Tajikistan. Especially under unhygienic conditions, these migrants are unable to self-quarantine, and usually they have a very limited or sometimes even no access to health services.
What do you mean when you say that they don't have access to health system?
With the regulations for Russians accepted for the COVID-19, is Prime Minister Mishustin's cabinet, he unveiled new economic and regulatory measures. And he wanted to mitigate the impact of coronaviruses, and such as home delivery of medications. There were also special procedures to pay a sick leave and determinant of payments of companies in difficult situations. But we see that actually these regulations are not applied to migrants who are working there illegally, who are not protected by any law, by any supranational entities, who are stepping outside with severe pressure and not being able to actually mitigate themselves under a very hard conditions. So we see that there is a lack of labor migrant policies being implemented in Russia. And we see this failure also in Eurasian Economic Union, where economic integration and economic development was a priority for Central Asian countries and for Russia as well. But after Russia closed its borders and announced a ban on entry of foreign nationals, the closure just confirms that the union and migrants are in a state of crisis, are not protected by any laws, and will also be exposed to a more difficult conditions after a few months, because they're still not protected by any case, by any health securities and insurances.
Right. Let me bring Tohir, you here. I mean, Tajikistan being one of the largest contributor of migrant workers to Russia. So what do you hear from those migrant workers who are trapped in Russia these days? I'm particularly interested in their stories of survival when someone gets sick, what they do, how they navigate these challenges. And also, there was a concern, later I will get Damilia's points on that, in the recent media reports, which talks about the draft law, if this goes through, would also include COVID-19 into the list of diseases which grounds for deportation. I mean, it's not not a law yet, but there's a discussion about this going on. I mean, there is already lots of existing challenges, fear factor for those migrant workers who especially do not have legal permits to be in Russia. So once they get sick, what they do, how they treat themselves?
We have video programs, and it's mostly about the migrants and their life. And recently I've received a video showing that people who just record themselves, and they were digging inside a trash bin to find out something like useful to sell and earn money. And one of them even called me and asked for NGO contacts and other Tajik activists that can help them, or they donate something to help other migrants. And I shared his phone, and he just sent me an SMS calling me that I don't have any credit. Can you please call that guy that he can call me and send us some money, because we don't have anything to eat and we don't have any place to stay. And the most important thing that as you said, most of them work in construction sites. And recently we have received videos that they are closing the construction sites, and most of these workers live there in wagons, and that they don't know where to go. And in this case, and they will be in the situation will get worse and worse, and they are more susceptible to the disease. We received videos that some of them that hospitalized in Russian medical facilities, some of them like just tries that they are treating us well. But as you said, Era, before they had it, like don't have insurance, and they don't have money to pay. And there is a lot of rumors that if the Tajik migrant and another Central Asian migrant get COVID-19, the Russian doctors, they just inject them some poison to kill them and get rid of them. Economic impact is, like we can say, catastrophic, though, for these migrants.
Right. Bruce, let me bring you in here. So what kind of stories you have been hearing from Russia about the day-to-day struggle for survival of these migrant workers under the context of COVID-19? As we already discussed, the challenges of being a migrant worker in Russia is already immense. Now, on the top of that, you have COVID-19. So please go ahead.
You know, there's so many stories. They go there to find work, and now they're basically out of work. So they got problems with housing. As we've heard, they got problems with food. You know, they aren't really covered by any of the social benefits, you know, that Russians are. Or although I would make a distinction, and though maybe Damilia or Aruka can know something more, but Kyrgyzstan, being a member of the Eurasian Economic Union, their migrant laborers do get slightly different treatment. I'm not sure if they get, you know, like for one thing, they're trying to see if they can get pensions. But I think that they do have some kind of medical coverage because they're a Eurasian Economic Union. But migrant laborers in Tajik and Uzbekistan wouldn't have that at all. So basically, you've gone to find work. Now you're out of work. You lose your place you live in. You know, there's stories of people that, you know, as we've heard, they go to the airports. Their patents, permission to work in the country is running out, but there's no flights to get home. So they're stuck in transit. And they're, you know, airport people are giving them some food, but they can't go back into the city. They can't get on a plane to go home. You know, this has happened in Turkey, too, with some of the Central Asian migrant laborers. You know, I mean, it's just like the worst of all worlds. They went there to try to get money, and now they got nothing. Even some of what you might call the better case scenarios, there's groups of migrant laborers who have been renting a place, 20, 30, 40 of them, that live in one place, and maybe a few of them got the job, and so they can still do something about rent and possibly even something about food. But the fact is, if one of them gets sick, there's 30 or 40 of them living in one of these places. Mm. So it runs right through. And of course, a lot of them probably don't go to try to get medical treatment. That's the biggest fear, is that there is somebody that's sick, but they don't know what they can do. They don't figure they'll get any medical treatment in Russia, or things will get worse. Maybe they'll get deported, or, you know, or like Tahir just said, there's these rumors floating around. Maybe they'll get killed. It was always a hard deal anyway for them.
Yeah.
But now it's just a miserable situation.
Yeah, really a challenging environment there. And of course, in this situation, when they rent a place together with dozens of other migrant workers, of course, the social distancing is not an option, which at this stage suggested to be the best approach to treat or avoid COVID-19 infections. On a related topic, Damilia, earlier we were talking about the challenges that migrant workers are increasingly facing in terms of renting a place, given that they don't have any income. And this is creating an issue between tenants and the landlords. Could you please explain that? What kind of challenges are we talking about here?
Yeah, multiple problems there. One issue is that there's a general reluctance of landlords to register their tenants, even Russians who migrate, for instance, to Moscow from other parts of Russia. It's even greater when it comes to people coming from Central Asia. I mean, it coupled sometimes with xenophobic attitudes. It is a notorious problem with the housing market, especially in Moscow, where roughly at least 10% of all the public ads for housing actually openly quote no Asians, no Caucasians. I mean, Caucasians not as in white people, but as in people coming from North Caucasus. So openly racist, xenophobic ads. And a lot of it is actually without openly disclosing, but in landlords' resistance to registering tenants. So until summer 2018, the employers could register employees at their places of the company. As of July 2018, it's no longer possible. So people have to be registered somewhere in some type of housing. And unfortunately, what happens is considerable portion of migrants buy this fake registration where they have on the papers certain address, but in reality, they live in these communal flats, shared apartments, etc. elsewhere. And now with the lockdown, it creates additional problems because police now checks whether people are maintaining the lockdown and self-isolation requirements, and people are allowed to go to the nearby grocery shops and to walk around not further than 100 meters from their place of residence, and place of residence is the place where you are registered. And where migrants are registered in one place but in fact live in another, there are already reports that they have been stopped by police and then they run into trouble and are accused of violating self-isolation regime. So it's essentially a sort of a catch-22 problem. It always has been, but now it's aggravated by the lockdown and self-isolation requirements, unfortunately.
I have also seen a picture where hundreds of migrant workers were lined up either to get a document or get through some sort of registration. I guess there's also something called potent, which migrant workers require to be able to stay in Russia, which seems to be quite a struggle to obtain it. So how these immigration processes are taking place in these days when practically the city in the country is under lockdown?
Well, to the credit of Russian authorities, they actually announced that they will allow extension of all the permits, migration cards, and other documents for the migrants who were legally in the country for the period of this lockdown. Unfortunately, when it comes down to the paid patents, it's essentially like a monthly extendable permit that labor migrants coming from countries that are not part of Eurasian Economic Union have to obtain. So essentially, like, for instance, nationals of Kazakhstan or Kyrgyzstan don't need to buy those patents, whereas people from Uzbekistan, Tajikistan have to do it on a monthly basis. And now there are twofold problems. One is the fee. It's over 5,000 rubles per month, which is essentially around $70 a month. And also they have to reapply on a monthly basis to have it done. And with all the centers that process the documentation on the lockdown, there are problems with other documentation. So the extension works, but people have to do it. But at the same time, centers are closed. So it is a complicated issue. But with the patent, there is one center is in a location called Sakharov on the outskirts of Moscow. And all of the migrants have to go into one place to get it done. And now the center works on reduced hours. So migrants have a reduced window of opportunity to actually have it done. So that creates the queues. And unfortunately, that contributes to resentment that is building up and xenophobic attitudes and migrantophobia, so to say, that against the background of the pandemic and all the social and economic struggles that we should not downplay are very, very harsh for Russian nationals as well. It hits them very hard as well. But unfortunately, it also creates the atmosphere where xenophobic and anti-migrant attitudes are flourishing.
Yeah.
And seeing the pictures of those queues in Sakharov war, actually, and also the pictures of migrants continuing to work on construction sites were actually fueling those attitudes as well.
So the city is, you know, sort of under lockdown, but those migrant workers still need money to survive, and their family back home depends on their remittances. So how does this situation affect them and their families back home financially, and what the future holds for them as things continue to worsen in Russia? Let's continue the discussion talking about about these and many other questions very shortly. But first, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Damelia Aykujina, a Russia researcher for Human Rights Watch, Aruka Urankezi, Kyrgyz researcher and journalist currently with the TRT World in Istanbul, Tohir Safarov, senior journalist with Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik service, Bruce Spanier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owozi. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the implications of the COVID-19 on Central Asian migrant workers in Russia. So, Damelia, you mentioned a couple of times this. I want to take, Aruka, your point on the signs of negative attitude towards migrant workers. I mean, when you have a crisis, unemployment, you certainly see a growth in negative reactions, as Damelia was talking about earlier. In Russia, the word migrant already has a negative connotation. So how has this attitude has changed toward migrant workers in these challenging times in Russia?
So COVID-19 obviously made the situation even worse for Central Asian migrants. They live on the fringes of Russian society. Huh. Most of the time, they're hounded by the police because there are a lot of illegal migrants trying to survive there, trying to find money and send back to their families. And these workers are exploited by their employers. They do a very cheap labor and increasingly disliked by much of the population. And because they work in the sites, the construction sites, they live in a very tightly packed apartments, as Bruce mentioned earlier, with 20, 30, sometimes even 40 people. Like, I've heard stories where Central Asians live and they basically just lie on the floor and they try to survive in these conditions. And under these circumstances, already having a difficult life, COVID-19 made it even worse because Central Asian migrants became a popular scapegoat for different societal and everyday troubles in Russia, such as unemployment, overpopulation in certain areas of certain cities, traffic jams. And when you look at it in this context, you see that the damage to public health brought up by the COVID-19, and not only to the public health, it's a global economy. The crisis unveiled further discrimination against certain ethnic communities. They are blamed for carrying the virus in certain places. They're blamed for being unhygienic, not obeying rules, not staying at home, because even some migrant workers, they don't have home. So there are some stories that not only witnessed but also heard that migrants are trying to survive in certain areas of the city because they don't have places to live in. So when you look at this from this context, you actually understand that migrant workers in Central Asia are the most vulnerable to the COVID-19. And it even makes more difficult, not only for them, but also for their families who were relying on their money, who are trying to survive with that money. And most probably the discussion will go on with the remittances. But the COVID-19 not only brought difficulties for the migrants itself, but also the families who are trying to survive under these conditions.
Right. On the families, Tohir, especially Tajikistan, seems to be hard hit by this. So what kind of stories are you hearing from Tajikistan there? The people who are in Moscow in Russia to help them financially, but now those people in Russia are needing help for themselves. So money is not coming, remittances are not coming to the country. What kind of stories of survivals are you hearing from Tajikistan in connection to the challenges in Russia involving their fellow countrymen there?
Recently, we had a report about the family who has certainly a migrant worker in Russia, and the most of the families in Tajikistan have at least one migrant worker. And the head of the family, the mother, said that the COVID-19 pandemic destroyed their, not the life, but changed the whole situation. Some of them are just sending back money to those migrants in Russia to have something to eat or to survive in next maybe 2 months. And the migrants say that our families here just staying, and they now turn to just the bread and tea, as it was during civil war in Tajikistan. So they say that the flow of money stopped. The families now just trying to save their last money. And even, as I said, that just some of them are sending money back to their relatives in Russia to have something to survive. And but still, they say that we hope the situation will change in the next 2 months, which is, I think it's, if I can say, it's a far false hope.
Bruce, Central Asian governments depend a lot on the remittances that comes from Russia to their countries. I think in Tajikistan, it almost reaches to 50% of their annual GDP. So anything you heard that their national governments back in Central Asia are doing to help those migrant workers when they are in really in a tough situation these days in Russia or to their family members?
Yeah, I haven't seen much about that, to tell you the truth, that the governments, they're so busy trying to worry about the people that they got in their own countries and how they're going to, what they're going to do for them, because, you know, of course, there's lockdowns all over the place. There's a lot of people that are currently, temporarily anyway, unemployed in Central Asia. Plus, their medical systems are extremely challenged at the moment, at least in the 30 countries that admit that they have the virus. So, you know, the most I've seen the Central Asian governments comment on this is the fact that they know it's going to hurt them. You know, you mentioned the remittances, and they're substantial. This is going to cost, really, in cases, more than $1 billion, probably, if it goes on long, that they got used to having sent back every year. And that's a lot of money in countries like Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan. If they lose that kind of money, it's not only a problem of that it's not coming into the country and being spent there, but, you know, we talked about how the families are doing, migrant laborers that are out there. And Tahir mentioned, you know, the families back in Central Asia have been counting on this money. I mean, they're dependent upon it. Yeah. And if this is cut off, it's going to create huge problems throughout Central Asia as well as in Russia.
Yeah, so it is not really a problem of one country there, obviously. I mean, all region, whole world is facing this situation, and they have to come up with a solution together. So this is the best time for them to act together to find a solution to this issue. Do you see Central Asian leaders talking to each other or talking to Vladimir Putin in Russia to come up with an idea to be able to provide some sort of urgent help for those people? Any regional conversation is taking place about this?
About those topics, you know, not really. It's one of the unfortunate things about this whole pandemic is that for the most part, every country has tackled it on its own. They have their own approach to how they're going to do it. And cooperation, we're really just kind of reaching the point where people are helping other countries, and there's groupings of countries that are trying to help one another. But we're at the very early stage. Up until even this month, you know, the first week of this month, everyone was pretty much on their own trying to figure out how they were going to deal with this and what they were going to do. You know, I've seen some stuff about the Eurasian Economic Union trying to come up with some programs that might be able to help. But, you know, all these countries are focused mainly on trying to take care of their own, the people in their own countries at the moment. And we can only hope that the situation will ease and it will calm down enough that they can start asking these kind of questions. But, you see the figures of new cases every day in Russia. I mean, it's phenomenal for a country that just had it in the hundreds not so very long ago, that they're registering them in the thousands by the day now. Right. All of a sudden. So.
Damilia, the authorities in the region are not really talking about this together as one voice. But the other day, I've also seen a beautiful example of a solidarity within migrant communities in Russia. I think this was the initiative by the Tajik immigrant workers, where they have been knocking on the doors of people in need and distributing much needed help. Is this a sort of an isolated thing that I have seen, or it is happening everywhere?
No, apparently there is a great reliance on the so-called diaspora and the local entrepreneurs from countries in the region. So there are reports of the same happening in different communities. Unfortunately, it looks as though it happens, so to say, within communities. So Moldovanian diaspora is helping Moldovanian labor migrants. Tajik entrepreneurs are focusing primarily on helping Tajik labor migrants and so on. But it does happen. For instance, when the remaining labor migrants who were trying to get out from the country and essentially living at the airports, when they were eventually kicked out from the airports in the end of March, according to reports, a considerable portion of them were taken in by the businessmen, the local businessmen from, because majority of them were ethnic Tajiks, were taken by the Tajik businessmen and accommodated, at least for the time being. It's not limited to diaspora. We should highlight that. So for instance, when people were stranded in transit zones in the airports, a lot of local business people, Russian business people who ran food stalls in the airport, actually stepped up and started one of the first to respond and starting providing, so to say, humanitarian relief and feeding these people. But unfortunately, coming back to the issue that you raised earlier, despite extensive cooperation between states in other areas like security or cooperation in criminal matters, economic cooperation, the countries don't seem to pay as much attention and did not have apparently contingency when it comes to taking care of their nationals abroad. So while media reports indicate that prior to shutting down of its borders, the Russian prime minister actually had conversations with the leaders of countries in the region, so they were aware of what is happening, there seems to be absolute lack of cooperation and coordination of steps that countries have undertaken to prevent the situation of strandedness that has occurred. And different countries seem to have a different level of engagement with their stranded nationals. For instance, only April 12, Uzbekistan apparently has organized a repatriation flight for around 200 Uzbek nationals who were in one of those detention centers in Moscow. We don't seem to receive similar reports from other countries in the region. And for instance, there was a recent interview by Moskalkova, the ombudsperson Moskalkova, who actually complained how they have prepared everything on their side, but Tajikistan is not stepping up to accept its nationals whom Russia wants to deport from its territory.
That's very
And Russia, for instance, continues to run repatriation flights for its over 30,000 nationals stranded abroad. There are a lot of issues and shortcomings with their operations as well, but at least they announced that they will be providing per diems for those stranded nationals, and they are continuing to run those repatriation flights from abroad. Unfortunately, countries in the region don't seem to follow the suit in that instance.
Let me bring Tohir, I'm coming to you. Earlier, Tajikistan brought its citizens, at least some of them, from China. How the authorities explain that they are not repeating this when it comes to people who are trapped in Russia?
So they organized several charter raids, but as you know, there are hundreds of them or thousands of them in Russia, and just these charter raids were organized just to Moscow, and they brought back several hundred. But recently, there were telephone conversations between Mikhail Mishustin, a Russian prime minister, and Tajik prime minister Kohir Rasulov. It was on April 7th, and we heard that they talked about the COVID-19, and also Russian media reported that Mikhail Mishustin raised the issue of bringing back Tajik migrants who are in Russia. But in Tajik media, there was nothing about migrants, and they said that the two sides were just talking about economic issue. But one of Tajik officials told Radio Azadi that they did not discuss any charter race to bring back migrants because there could be ill or sick people who can bring the virus to Tajikistan. But we receive every hour or let's say every minute complaints from migrants who say that they just stuck in a detention center, in hostels, and they don't have any means to leave, and they want to go back. And the Tajik authorities, they hesitate to bring them back, and they say that we don't have any means and to organize charter race and bring back thousands of people who are trapped there.
Yes, it's such a painful, maybe one could call this irresponsible behavior by the authorities, that on one hand they keep saying that they don't have any COVID-19 case in the country, on the other hand they let thousands of people trapped elsewhere outside in the country, saying that they could bring virus to the country. So for those people who are in Russia without job, without proper place to live, and without money to buy food, what's their hope? How they think they will come out of the situation? Aruka, because of your background as a researcher, you speak to those people, those migrant workers, what they say about this?
So, obviously, each citizen relies on their own government. Kyrgyz migrants are relying that Kyrgyz government will actually do something, and as earlier was mentioned, they will arrange charter rates or something. But unfortunately, many of them haven't seen, many of them have been strapped in the borders, not able to actually go home. And one of the main issues that they voiced out is the information problem, because initially when there was this outbreak of the COVID-19 early in January, people were informed about how to deal with these problems. They should actually always wash their hands. They should be wearing masks or going outside. But actually these migrants, because they are not only uneducated, but they were also working on the sites for hours and hours and mm-hmm. coming back and just not really dealing with what was happening out there. They were not informed properly of what is the problem. And so we see that there are a lot of migrants who are under serious health conditions and trying to survive this virus. So right now, the only hope for them is obviously their own governments. But what also Russian authorities should do is to take immediate steps to reduce the immigration detention facilities. They should provide and secure these migrants with food, with hygiene products and healthcare. Unless this problem is not solved, migrants will be in a more difficult situation. And every day, every week, they're losing hope because, unfortunately, they're stuck between borders, not able to go back home or survive under harsh conditions living in Russia.
Also, we need to be wrapping up the discussion very quickly here. But Damilia, your point on that, I mean, who are better positioned to help those people in Russia these days?
Well, it is a complicated issue. They, for the time being, they are definitely excluded from all the benefits that the Russian authorities are designing for its nationals. Again, a significant portion of the Russian society is not covered by those benefits either. And labor migrants were the first to in the line for job cuts. Also, they were employed in the sectors related to, for instance, like waitresses, etc., that were particularly in the first hit by the pandemic and the lockdowns that ensued. Who is to be responsible for providing these people with the relief? I think it should be a joint responsibility of host state and the sending state, meaning their countries of origin, and Russia, obviously, as well, because people are within on its territory, within its jurisdiction. How it would work in practice, especially considering that both the countries of the origin economies and Russian economy will suffer, already suffering, but will also suffer in the long term. It's highly problematic. There's obviously no easy solution, but people are suffering now, and there should be some plans for relief. Repatriation options are provided for those who are trying to return home, and definitely there should be alternatives to detention and certain steps taken to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in places of detention during migration detention centers.
Right. Thank you very much. So, Bruce, speaking of future, this thing isn't going anywhere quickly. Even if restrictions on movements are eased, our routine are not going to be the same for a long time. So what the future holds for these migrant workers in Russia?
Oh, wow, that is a good question. I mean, they got a real rough time ahead of them, there's no doubt. Like I said, life wasn't easy to begin with. It's going to be worse. There's been all kinds of sociological studies that show that when economies fall on hard times, the first people look around to blame are immigrants. And Central Asians are going to be targeted. They already have been targeted, but it's going to be worse. The lucky ones might be able to get out and get back home. Not that their economic situation will be improved by getting back home, but at least the fear factor might be lowered a little bit. Russia, of course, it's not only the health thing, but, Russia's got serious economic problems because of what's happening with the price of oil, too. So there's not going to be many jobs for a long time, and for those that are going to stick it out, this would probably be the worst experience they've had. And for the ones that go home, they might be unemployed, but you probably end up considering them the lucky ones.
If I may add, and quickly, sometimes get comments on that migrants, Tajik migrants and other Central Asian migrants tell us that we know that no one can help us in these days, but we want Russian authorities, at least Russian police, to not harass us in these days, not to help.
Terrific. Okay. With this, I think we have to wrap up the discussion here. Thank you very much, Tahir Safarov, senior journalist with Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik service. Also, big thanks goes to Damilia Itkhuzina, Russia researcher for Human Rights Watch, Aruka Urankizi, Kyrgyz researcher and journalist currently with TRT World in Istanbul, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast. So we did it for this week, despite stay-at-home order in my part of the world. Fingers crossed for the next week. And we are certainly hoping to continue the conversation. Until then, bye-bye, colleagues. Thank you.